Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventurous and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about the Fantasy Dwarves.
Now, before we get started, we want to mention that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we're not providing any kind of official answers for anything. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
So, Luis, unless I'm mistaken, dwarves have been around for an extremely long time, especially in the form of, you know, in the realms of fantasy, you know, like mythologies from all over the world, like the Viking mythologies and the Germanic mythology. Dwarves have always been like this entity that dwells in the mountains and the earth, right? And then, but then here comes Tolkien, who kind of like really, really put dwarves into a way that we could kind of understand in the realm that we think of for fantasy now.
Yeah, he sure did. I think a lot of what people think of dwarves has been filtered through Tolkien. Any dwarves that you see in video games and the like, a lot of them draw inspiration from Tolkien and stuff like that. There's
Dragon Age.
Like Dragon Age, yes. Or most fantasy games that you play end up having a bit of Tolkien touch, just because when you start with that and then everyone does that and then you copy what you liked before, what you saw from someone else, but they had copied Tolkien, it kind of just ends up drawing all that same inspiration. He happened to take the existing fantasies and kind of mix them up together and give them a kind of solid structure, I think, in the form of his version of dwarves.
And then you have those much less friendly, less happy, less violent Disney dwarves, like with Snow
yes.
White. And then you have the much more violent and much less happy dwarves from the Warhammer universe, even the 40K universe, where they still technically exist and are known as squats.
Yeah, dwarves are all over the place.
One thing that all of these dwarves share, though, is they're always a little bit shorter. They're always a little bit stockier, a little bit hairier. Yeah. And then they have these exaggerated facial features, or at least most of the ones that I remember, like the dwarves from Warcraft, right? They have these big old ears, these little beady eyes, and these big noses.
Yeah, they're all really stout, kind of old men squashed into, like, buff, stocky dudes.
Now, there's every realm does this next part a little bit differently, which is why I want to hear what you think about it. Do dwarven women have beards?
Yeah, some of them. I see no reason why they shouldn't have beards. I mean, anyone here in the real world can potentially grow a beard or facial hair, and I don't see why we should just decide only the dwarven men can do it. I bet there are dwarf women with beards that rival some of the coolest beards you've ever seen in art and fantasy throughout all the other fictional media that you've seen. I bet there's like a master female dwarf beards crafter out there that everyone looks up to, and it's like, she's got the greatest beard. We love her so much. I want to learn from her.
I did play in a home game where the GM introduced like a prominent dwarven woman as an NPC, and he described her rich regalia and the jewels that she used to keep her beard like neat and like short. I've always kind of pictured that when they have them, they keep them like shorter than like the male beards, and but much in much better like shape. You know, they're really nice and like really well done.
In a kind of opposite idea here. Not all dwarf men need to have beards, right? I think it'd be fine if there's some dwarf guys around that have no beards or have like short, trim, kind of just classic little thin beards rather than the big long braids that you see and everything.
But that definitely goes against traditional dwarf culture, though, doesn't it? Not that there's anything wrong with it, but because dwarves are, you know, pretty traditional.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For the most part. And that's always been a tradition thing. Dwarves are also really known for being hard workers and being very industrious. That's why the dwarf miner is such a stereotype or such a cliche. They're very loyal to their family, to their clan, and to the friends who have worked hard to earn that loyalty. They also hold on tight to their grudges. Oh, man. That's a fun Warhammer thing. That's going in me book, because dwarves have a book of grudges, and they write them all down, and they never forget them. Dwarves are pretty typically portrayed as brave and pretty stoic, and for the most part, they tend to live under mountains or underground.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that dwarves I see a lot is stubborn. They're very stubborn a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah.
So swinging back to that dwarf with no beard, I could see one being like, I don't want to be following all these traditions and be so stubborn that they insist on not being someone that falls in line with all the other culture stuff.
Somebody who just stubbornly goes against the grain of dwarf society.
Yes,
I could definitely see that. That would definitely be a player character too, because none of the NPCs are going to be that wild.
No.
So if I want to play a dwarf in Pathfinder, right,
mm-hmm.
What kind of things are going to go into all of my characters?
Well, Pathfinder ancestries have a lot of stuff that goes into them. It's the first time we're really talking about them, but first thing you're going to notice is that you get 10 hit points as a bonus bit of hit points when you first create your character, which is a lot. That's as many as a fighter or a ranger, not quite as many as a barbarian. That's more than most people would get, though. You will be medium in size, and because you're a short, stocky fella, you have a speed of 20 feet when you stride.
Your ability boosts are going to be constitution and wisdom, so you'll always be just a little bit hardier, and you'll always have a little bit more common sense. You also get the traditional ancestry free ability boost to just help you in whatever way you feel like you need it. But you're a little bit gruff around the edges, and sometimes you say exactly what's on your mind, which doesn't always translate to people liking what you gotta say. So you take a penalty to charisma.
That might be that dwarf stubbornness we were just talking about.
Just might be.
Yeah. You get to speak common and dwarven, and if you are a smart dwarf, you also can pick a few extra languages. The list here includes gnomish, which I assume is probably because you hang out around nature a bit and maybe have met some gnomes in your day. Goblin, because they like to hide in caves and the like, probably encounter those. Jotun, which is the language of giants. Dwarves, a lot of dwarves don't like giants, so they probably know a lot about giants and how to speak with them so they can yell back at them and tell them bad things. Orcish, similar. They don't really get along with orcs, or a lot of them don't. And Terran, which is the language of the earth, which makes sense for someone that lives underground and the like. And finally, Undercommon, which is the common that happens underground. Makes sense. Great. Dwarves live under the ground, so they have all these earthy and groundish related languages.
Unsurprisingly, all dwarves have the dwarf and humanoid traits. And, interestingly, all dwarves gain full-on dark vision, which is not to be understated. That's a very strong ability.
It isn't. But I feel like it also kind of explains maybe a lot of dwarf art being just stone and stuff, because while you have dark vision, you only see in black and white. So maybe a lot of the stuff they make, it's like, we don't need color. We just make what looks good.
Well, and let's not forget about the other kind of dwarf art, maybe the most important dwarf art, ale. So in Pathfinder, we also have a few different, how would you describe the heritage?
How would I describe heritages? I think this kind of ties. So in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, a heritage just kind of represents maybe the upbringing or the kind of
maybe the region
lineage or region where you're from, a lot of like the stuff around you that kind of influences how you grow up and change your physiology. I was trying to say physiologically, and that's a hard word to say. And looking at the dwarf heritages, it definitely seems like a lot of it may be tied to maybe the kind of stuff that your particular culture would do. So, you know, if you're part of the culture where you were, you came from heroes that could shrug off enemy magic, you were ancient blooded dwarf, that heritage makes sense, and so on and so forth.
Some of the other kinds of heritages that you could be from is you could be an anvil dwarf, where you're a descendant of famed crafters. You could be a death warden dwarf, where your ancestors were the guardians of tombs. Elemental heart dwarf, where you're connected to the planes of fire by the dwarves from that area of existence.
Could also be a forged dwarf, where you're used to dealing with hot environments. Or an oathkeeper dwarf that is all about keeping their oath, of course, you know, making the promises, maintaining your word. It could also be a rock dwarf where you lived among the most ancient of stones in the mountains in the depths of the earth. Or you might even be just a strong-blooded dwarf who's just hardy and strong and can keep down all the worst ale that's out there.
So, Luis, you're going to have to help me with this, because I've spent almost my entire tabletop gaming career playing in homebrew adventures and homebrew world settings. Tell me a little bit about dwarves and Galarian, though.
I can do that. So I'll give you the brief rundown of the history of dwarves and who they are now in Galarian. So way back in the day, thousands of years ago, way before Earthfall and stuff. Dwarves are just creatures that lived under the ground. They all lived underground. None of them had ever seen the surface. And then there was a call to the dwarves from their god Torag, who said, "Hey, when you get my sign, I need you to head up through the ground and try to reach the surface and see the sky." And then Earthfall happened. A giant chunk of rock falls out of the sky and shakes the entire planet. And they're like, "That's the sign, let's go." So for many generations, they climb up through the underground, up through the dark lands, and they encounter a lot of creatures along the way. So they fight lots of monsters. They wake up some creatures called orcs and get into fights with them. They probably fight underground giants and all that other stuff. Eventually reach the surface. They're like, "Aha, we did it. We completed the quest for sky. We found the sky. There it is. It's not at all like what we see when we look up underground, but now we're here. And let's figure out what's going on here in the surface, the above ground." So that's where the dwarves first came from. And they eventually spread all over the place. There's actually a little sidebar in the Lost Omens legend book that mentions that the dwarves completed the quest for sky all over the surface of Galarian. So some came up in the Inner Sea, some came up in Tian Sha, some came up all the other continents. So there's probably dwarves all around the world, the ones that we know in particular around the Inner Sea. And the dwarves of the Inner Sea break up into three ethnicities, if you will. They're kind of, rather than based on like where they are in the world, a lot of them are based on their elevation. So there are three main dwarf ethnicities. There are the Grundaxin, oh my gosh, fantasy names, who live underground. They're the underground dwarves, and they're the traditionalists, and they preserve all of the dwarf history. There's the Irgoxkin that came up to the surface and then spread outward and kind of grew into their own different groups. And finally, the Holtaxkin, which are the ones that live up in the mountains and have the cool mountain keeps and stuff like that. And each of those dwarves are different and have their own cultures. And then beyond that, the surface dwarves also break down into further cultures and stuff. There's like the Taralut dwarves of the Mongi Expanse, and dwarves all over the place. But the big thing to know is that they all used to live underground. Now they're here, and then they kind of break up into different elevations to determine cool stuff about them with each of their own different cultures and customs and traditions.
definitely my favorite thing about dwarves has to be the ones that live up in the mountains. I think that those mountain fortresses are so cool. I just love them to death. Those giant gothic structures hidden behind crags where not really only other dwarves are going to see them, but for themselves and for their clan, they will have honor and show it through their skill. I love it so much.
That's one other thing I forgot to mention is a particular thing for the Galarian dwarves is their clan daggers. Every clan of dwarf has its own type of dagger, which it has its own very specific design, and it has a very specific gem with its own specific cut built into the handle of it to kind of distinguish where you came from, your history and stuff like that. And when you're born, before you're born, your family will make you your clan dagger and use that to cut your umbilical cord and then hand that to you, and that's your dagger that you hold onto for life. So no dwarf should be found without their clan dagger unless something terrible has gone wrong.
You know, that makes it interesting to maybe have a... Well, let's get into dwarf characters then, because now I'm thinking of a dwarf character whose clan dagger was stolen, and now, you know, they're kind of maybe clanless. I think that'd be a cool, neat character to play. But for this, so we've talked about who dwarves are as a people, but now I want to talk about who people are as dwarves, you know? Let's talk about the individual dwarves. This isn't, I don't think this would work well the same way doing builds like we did with classes.
Yeah.
So let's just come up with, like, you know, some general, like, hey, this would be a neat dwarf character, you know? And we'll give some examples of names for them. And then my favorite part of this is I want us to do dwarven accents. Even though I'm not going to be good at it, I think we'll have a lot of fun doing it. So, Luis, what kind of dwarves have you brought to me today?
All right, I'm grabbing a few dwarves that I have from my history of playing the game. I think the very first dwarf I ever played was a druid, and immediately, because, you know, I'm a player and I have a player character, I want to go against the grain of dwarves. Be like, I want my druid to, or my dwarf, to not grow a beard. I don't want him to have a beard. But not by choice, just by chance, in unfortunate genetics, he can't grow a beard. So as he grows into his druidic abilities, he learns, okay, well, I can't grow a beard. I've had to deal with that stuff a lot. I'm going to use my natural powers to make my beard. And he used his druid abilities to grow moss on his face, and that became his beard.
That is so cute.
To represent both his connection to nature and also to tie back to, like, I still love my culture. But yeah, I think druids are great for dwarves. Dwarves have a bonus to wisdom, and druids are great, are all about wisdom and stuff, and being hardy, you know, they can survive out in nature. They know a lot about stone. That makes a lot of sense. And for this dwarf, I went really silly. It's a player character, so it's got silly names. And I'm like, what is the most dwarvenish thing you can ever think of? Ale, of course. All right, how do dwarves normally construct their names? Oh, well, they're usually, you know, they're like Strongfoot or stuff like that. So it's like, all right, so this guy's clan, he comes from the Ale Bottom family. And so I have Smetbo Alebottom, my dwarven druid, who has a pet frog that lives in his mossy beard.
That's so cute. Okay, we'll try this one. Mm-hmm. I picked a really classic dwarf trope, because I haven't actually played a dwarf character before, but if I did, I would be really tempted to start with your traditional dwarven fighter. One of the classics, like Brunor Battlehammer, you know? Use like an axe or a hammer and a shield, and I would name this character Winnow Boulder Beater. From a boulder beater from a clan of warriors or miners, you know? And let's see, if I did an accent for Widow Boulder Beater, I think it'd be like this. I think it'd be like, by the stones, that's a nice hammer if ever I've seen one. Yeah. What do you think?
I like it. I just realized, I guess Smetbo would have been my character to do an accent with, so I guess here I go. I'm trying to remember what voice I did, because I tried to do a voice, but that was like 10 years ago when I played him for 4th edition D&D. to tell you how old this was. Let's see. So if we're in the same line, it'd be something like, "By the stones, that's a nice hammer if I've ever had one."
That was pretty good, actually. All right, what other dwarves have you brought today?
All right, so I think dwarves are surprisingly cunning. They're very, like, good at, like, understanding engineering and stuff like that. So I think, you know, why can't a dwarf be a smart guy, be a mastermind of sorts? So I think a thief, a rogue of some kind would be pretty good as a dwarf because, one, they can be pretty cunning on their own, but also they would be very underestimated. No one would expect the dwarf to be the thief, the ringleader, the mastermind. There is a dwarf NPC I introduced in an AP one time by the name of Olin Jack, who was the head of a group called the Blue Jacks. That was a kind of like a group of adventurers, thieves guild stuff that I thought was really cool. Very old for a dwarf, but because of that, he's got a lot of experience and is very good at manipulating and kind of reading people and stuff like that.
Now, I noticed that you didn't have a clan name for Olin Jack. Are they clanless?
This was before everything had a clan, but also he doesn't want to give up any information. I always assumed Olin Jack was just a pseudonym. That's not his real name, because you don't want to give away any information about who you are, so you got to keep a fake name in case you ever need to, you know, drop the facade and be someone else.
I still feel like that, like, Olin Jack's clan probably wouldn't be super into not, you know, like, announcing and doing honor for the good of your clan. I feel like he might probably still be, like, exiled or something.
That's fine. I think that's fine with him.
Yeah. Speaking of smart dwarfs, I also thought I really like kind of turning the tables on, like, what we think. So even though my first one was classical dwarf fighter, what about, like, a dwarven cultist, you know? Like a dwarf who kind of, like, is at the, like, in the mines that have been closed for hundreds of years, you know, kind of off doing their own thing, maybe they left their clan or they got kicked out of their clan for being too weird, but they're still a dwarf and they still want to make things. So what about this dwarf who's like a witch cultist of like the runic patron, you know, who like searches like forgotten or forbidden lore for secrets to help them craft. And the name I came up with would be Eared Pine Watcher. I thought Pine Watcher would be like a cool name for a dwarven clan who's like rangers or scouts, you know, like they go to the surface and, you know, they like make maps. So it might be cartographers. And so Eared Pine Watcher left that clan. And, you know, maybe mom and dad still are hoping they'll come back. So maybe he hasn't been fully exiled yet. Speaking of smart dwarves, what about, like, this has been done a few times, but you don't see it a lot. You know, the dwarven wizard, right? One of the Neverwinter games, I think that your character started out with a master who was a dwarf wizard, if I'm remembering that correct. Yeah, it's pretty good. And as a name for dwarf wizard, how do you feel about Erwin Page-Turner from a clan of lore masters, you know? Dwarves love tradition and history. I feel like there's definitely a clan that is, like, known for their ability to, like, maintain their history and their texts.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, like, maintaining records and then, like, spellbook is just another form of records, right? This is all the magic we've ever learned.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I think we're all about canny, clever dwarves, you and I, because I was leaning into the wisdom thing a bit. It's like, well, what can wisdom, what else does it mean? You know, you can be a good cleric, right? That's fine. But the other thing that came to mind is like, oh, wisdom is tied to perceptions. You probably notice and are aware of a lot of stuff. So I went with a dwarf investigator, this one by the name of Grula Full Eyes. She would be, she's full eyes because she sees everything.
Oh, that's
eyes
good.
Are full. And I think she'd be the kind that's very patient and very methodical, like looking everything up and down and would notice evidence and stuff like that and would be perfect for like coming up with conclusions based on everything that she can see. Perfect investigator, probably an amazing tracker as well. So it might be, her class might be investigator, but she might be more of a bounty hunter or something like that too.
They might be a rival clan of the Pine Watchers, just from a different hold or something.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be pretty cool. So, I mean, I think that's some pretty good examples of, like, how you can take something like a dwarf that is traditionally defined as, like, this kind of rigid, like, gruff fighter thing, and you can really do a lot with it. You can manipulate the concept of the dwarf in a lot of fun ways.
Mind, you're probably still going to have a pretty good time if you make a dwarf barbarian or a dwarf fighter anyway, but...
Oh, I think so, especially since, you know, they're already so good at it. And anytime you're taking something and just being better at it, you're probably going to have a good time with that too.
Yeah, but don't forget that there is that optional rule where you can give yourself an extra flaw in your character creation to then give yourself a boost in a different stat. So whatever class you want to play, even though the dwarf doesn't have the immediate perfect arrangement for it of stats, you can then get that boost anyway and still be really good at it. So you don't get intelligence, but for your wizard, you can still get, you know, 4 boosts to intelligence when the time comes.
Well, and on top of that, because of that flaw ability, you can cancel out your charisma negative. You can do this with any race. So you can have it, you know, a moderately successful dwarf sorcerer. No reason you can't. Especially if it's in your character. Yeah. But what I want to know, dear listeners, what questions did you have for us? From KD member Ryan, if you could give the ancestry a name other than a dwarf, what would it be?
One running joke we have between me and Eleanor at Paizo, us fellow developers that were just bad at naming things. We really, a lot of the time we give assignments, we're like, oh, you should name this new nation. Freelancer, you do it. We'll leave it to you because we don't know. We have no idea. I think I'd end up giving them some kind of in-setting name, something like the Gromar or something like that, or the Trovins. I don't know, some weird name that is just kind of a fantasy name. It's like they all look like dwarves. You know them as dwarves, but they call themselves Gromars.
When I think about something like this, I try to picture it like from the mind of a character who isn't that ancestry. So from like a halfling walks up to, you know, your traditional dwarf, what kind of like slang would they throw at them? You know how like goblins call like the taller races like longshanks and stuff? You know, like what would somebody say to a dwarf? Well, you know, what about groundling or like stoneling, you know? I thought those would be pretty decent. Aye, we'd be a clan of stonelings. You know, I think that'd be fine. But then, there also is, in the Warhammer 40k universe, before they got almost retconned out of existence, not fully, they're there. We can talk later if you want. They're called the Squats. And that was really interesting, too. Speaking of Squats, I'm going to recycle them for this question from user Lava Bing. Are there any good non-Tolkien depictions of dwarfs that you really like, and how would you build them in PF2?
Yes, so I try very hard to not talk about stuff that hasn't been released or anything, any secret Paizo knowledge that I have that, you know, right now I am Legend Lore Luis, I'm not Paizo Luis, but I have seen the Mongi Expanse book that's coming out in a month or two, and there are new dwarf ethnicities. They've already been talked about, the Tarula dwarves and stuff, in other books, but there's a deep dive on them, and they're not at all like any dwarves you've ever seen. There's some artwork that's shown up for them already where their beards are like rainbow color. They're like super like bright blues and fuchsias and purples. They look so much like they're the complete opposite of any other dwarves that you're used to seeing, and they're super cool. When that book comes out, that's how you build them, because you know all the information. And I think a lot of people enjoy all the new Mwangi dwarves, just because there's a lot of... It's dwarves given through, you know, a lens of that African mythology and folklore and all that stuff that has been drawn into the Mwangi Expanse, which is, I think, something brand new for a lot of people. So it'll be super duper cool. I also like that the Grundaxan dwarves, the underground dwarves, hey, their women grow beards. Look at that. That's not the typical dwarves you're seeing in all your other fantasy. No, they have beards. Great. Let's that That answers that question from earlier, Lauren.
That does, doesn't it? So, for this question, I want to note that there's a fine line between creativity and plagiarism. And I'm not sure which side of that I'm on here. Because I think right now,
from what I can see, I think you're on the side of homage.
Homage. Yeah, because right now I definitely, when Lava Being says a non-Tolkien adjacent depiction of dwarves, I'm going to go to the squats because I'm a huge 40K fan. And they would work surprisingly so well in Galarian. If you imagine like a clan of dwarves that lives underground in Numeria. Luis, what's your elevator pitch for what's so special about Numeria?
I think it's the fact that a giant spaceship fell out of the sky thousands of years ago, and now there's robots and all this super sci-fi tech all over the place.
Exactly. So picture this, like a big spaceship falls out of the sky, these dwarves mine up to it, and then start mining the ship itself, right? Mm-hmm. Now we've got a non-fantasy, or a non-Tolkien dwarf here. We've got the squats from 40K, right?
You got cyber dwarves.
I've had a theory, or not a theory, I've had an idea for a while where I want to run a character in Pathfinder 2 in Galarian who uses a laser gun. And I think we can do this without messing with it too much, right? I could just use the crossbow stats and I could say they shoot hard light, you know? Bam, it's the exact same thing. And this is how I would build it in PF2, is I'd build a dwarf from this clan under Numeria who uses like a hard light, like laser rifle. And I think that'd be so much fun.
Yeah, another question here from user JTrain1. Why do dwarves always seem to be presented as masculine and gruff?
So that's a very good question for an anthropologist, do you think? Like,
maybe.
This is really like a cultural question. Like, why is it that we think of dwarves like that? I know that one of the current reasons why is probably because of Tolkien. That's how he depicted them. And so much of what we know about dwarves in our tabletop games is kind of Tolkien-esque. Like, he kind of wrote the book on it, you know, however long ago. And I don't think that since then, since Lord of the Rings, I don't think there's been any major pop culture influences that really depicted dwarves as anything different. One of the ways that we think about our presentations of concepts is based off pop culture. And that kind of is the pop culture that we have, is dwarves as masculine and gruff.
I agree with you on all of that. I mean, there hasn't been like, if there was some Marvel movie that came out tomorrow that was like all about dwarves, if they were cyber dwarves, right? We might suddenly start having the dwarf collective consciousness kind of divert into like, oh, now there's traditional dwarves and there's the cyber dwarves, right? But I think another reason of that is because of the folklore origins. As we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, hey, they're entities that dwell in the mountains and in the earth. And what do we think of earth and mountains? We think of rocks and stones and stuff like that. And those are hard, coarse, rough materials. So I think it's very easy to be like, oh, well, these are tough, kind of inflexible things that you then just map that kind of same adjective, those same ideas to the people that are inspired by the stuff. So if there are people from the mountains, they are probably rigid and inflexible and coarse and rough and stuff like that. So I think that's where that gruffness comes from. And that ends up being also really kind of mapped to masculine traits a lot, which isn't necessarily always true, but I think that might be in part how that came about to be as well.
Now, one thing that's universal in dwarves for 99% of their depictions, I'm not going to tell you what the 1% is, but I do know what it is. Ask me later, I'll tell you. One thing that's ubiquitous in dwarves is that they're short. Just like our episode. So that's all we have for you today. Make sure you check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. Because if you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection. It's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.